Okay, well, good morning. I'm pleased to welcome a variety of members of the technical community this morning to have an exchange with GAC members regarding the universal resolvability of the domain name system, and so that we can hear a technical perspective on those issues. And hopefully, after this initial exchange that we have, it may lead to more focused work following this discussion, where we can perhaps examine in a more formal way some of the issues that we can identify in the discussions this morning. I will hand over to Suzanne Wolf and allow her to introduce herself. But in essence, this is an issue that we had discussed, I guess, some time ago. And we were relating the differences and, in some cases, the gap between what policymakers may do and what they may think is appropriate from a policy perspective. And the fact that the technical community may well work in a different manner and have different understandings of some of the same issues. So, anyway, without delay, Suzanne Wolf.
Thank you, Heather, and I'm really happy to be here and see so many familiar faces, many of them not often seen in GAC meetings. This is a little bit more ad hoc even than we expected because things have been so difficult to schedule. I guess in the last few days it's been more chaotic than usual, I think. But where this conversation started is an exchange that Heather and I had where she approached me about some of the concerns being discussed here about universal resolvability and issues around new GTLDs and changes to the root zone and so on. And asking what would be the impact of certain changes, you know, from a technical perspective, and I said, universal resolvability, I'm not, you know, tell me what that term means to you, you know, in a policy context, and what behavior, and we started talking about how the network actually behaves, and things like the DNS not being a single thing describable as one unvarying set of behaviors, and we realized that we had never had a conversation about even common terminology between policy discussions and conversations about how the network actually behaves and what's technically feasible or what the effects and side effects of certain actions might be just in terms of how operators manage networks. So we sort of decided that even though we don't even know yet fully what we need to talk about, it would be useful to kind of have an initial exchange of thoughts and see where there might be some way for us to work together to at least understand some issues in common terms. So we invited, I guess Heather invited a bunch of our more technically oriented colleagues, and I guess I'll take the liberty of asking people to introduce themselves, starting if John Curran is ready.
I'm John Curran. A lot of you know me as the president and CEO of Aaron. I was also the founder and chairman for a decade or so. I'm actually here in a personal capacity. I have experience as an operator of the internet infrastructure, having run 3 successful internet companies. I thought I could share some perspective as how this might be seen by some of the internet service providers out there.
Lyman Chapin. I have a private consulting company at this point. I was previously at BBN and have been working on internet technologies for a number of years. I also, on behalf of ICANN, chair the Registry Services Technical Evaluation Panel and also do a lot of work on the issue of IDN CCTLDs, particularly with respect to the current fast track.
Hi, I'm Ram Mohan. I'm the CTO for Afilius. It's a registry services provider company. We operate significant DNS and TLD infrastructure. And I'm also the ESAC liaison to the board. And my interest in coming here was to share a little bit more from the affiliate's perspective, some of the some thoughts about resolvability, considering operations in different parts of the world and how it even works today or does not work today.
I'm Matt Larson. I'm from VeriSign. I'm part of VeriSign Labs, which is our applied research organization, and I'm vice president of DNS research.
So I'm Danny McPherson. I'm actually at VeriSign with Matt as well. I'm also a member of the ESAC, and not here in that capacity, of course, but here as a member of VeriSign. And another affiliation is with the Internet Architecture Board, but again, I'm not here in that capacity. And so, thank you.
Ramses Martinez. I'm the head of information security for VeriSign.
And I should have introduced myself a little bit more formally. I'm Suzanne Wolf. I'm the Root Server System Advisory Committee liaison to the ICANN board, and I have been involved in internet infrastructure operations, particularly DNS, for about 20 years now.
Ron Damas. I work with ISC, currently mainly with FRoot. I've been working as well with registry systems, both in the names and the numbers areas, and internally at ISC, I'm known as Dolo 7, so whatever you need, I will try to help.
And I'm Thomas Darton, and I'm the IETF liaison to the board.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being here. So why don't I try to provide you with a little bit of background in terms of what the GAC has been discussing and why in this sense. The GAC actually sent a letter to the ICANN board on the topic of controversial strings. And as part of those discussions, the GAC concluded that the universal resolvability of the domain name system should be a policy objective, that we should value that, and that if top-level domains are going to be blocked at the national level, that is going to impact on universal resolvability of the DNS, which is this valued principle, at least from the perspective of the GAC and the governments that are around this table. So what we wanted to engage with you about is what is the relationship in terms of what's happening now and the impacts of blocking at the national level from a technical perspective, and how can we actually bridge those differences in perspective between what the policymakers are doing and thinking about the domain name system and what the technical community understands as being the issues. So, Suzanne, did you want to add anything, or shall we?
I'd like to see if anyone else wants to chime in there.
Okay. Would anyone like to comment? Okay, Matt.
Well, I think it would help when we talk about blocking to realize that there's actually multiple ways that this can be done at a technical level. So when one says blocking, that actually can encompass a wide variety of techniques. Why don't I just enumerate some of them just to give you an idea for, at a high level, what they are and some of the different challenges that they have. I suppose the first one is at the routing level, the internet reachability. In other words, ISPs exchange routing information about which IP networks are where, and blocking can be done by making certain ranges of IP addresses simply unreachable. Another way to do this is at the actual packet inspection layer. You could look at the IP packets as they flow across the boundary. You could stop IP packets bound for certain IP addresses, or a more sophisticated technique is something called deep packet inspection, where you look into the entire packet, maybe at the DNS query or the DNS response itself, looking for particular strings such as a particular domain name, and you know, perhaps dropping traffic that's considered objectionable. Yet another way to affect, you know, what I understand the committee means when you say blocking is at the recursive name server level. So these are the devices that that every machine on the internet has to send its DNS queries to, and they do the heavy lifting to actually resolve the query. You know, talking to various authoritative servers like the root servers and the .com servers and all the ccTLD authoritative servers, et cetera. So at the recursive name server level, ISPs and enterprises could put rules in to disallow the actual DNS resolution of particular domain names. And then finally, it's possible to do this with actual software on a user's end system. So, for example, it might be required that in order to sign up with a particular ISP in a particular country, you might have to install certain software, and that software then might control which sites you're able to connect to or not to connect to. So I wanted to give that overview of the different techniques because I think it's important to realize that some of them, well, all of them have challenges, and one of them, for example, you know, the internet, as we all know, doesn't follow political boundaries. So the actual network boundaries on the internet don't follow political boundaries. So it can be very difficult to implement some of these techniques with the fine-grained control that may be necessary. And then the final thing I guess I'd like to comment on is that the whole concept of blocking is collateral damage is an issue, and by that I mean it's easy to you would want to say cut with a scalpel, but instead you're cutting with a meat cleaver. It can be very difficult to have the intended effect, and as an example, if one were to say, let's say, block the IP addresses using whatever means of a particular objectionable TLD's name servers. So in other words, you said, all right, we're going to prohibit in this particular political region, we're not going to allow connectivity to these particular authoritative name servers for this objectionable TLD. Well, in many cases, authoritative name servers today, if we look at the root zone, many authoritative name servers serve more than one zone. You know, so for example, there are three name servers currently listed in the root zone that serve at least 21 TLDs or more. So if one were to block, you know, one of those name servers, you would not only block the objectionable TLD, but all the others. You know, you'd have an impact on the resolution of that as well. So I guess that would be what I wanted to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. That last point was really quite something, because I think that governments imagine that if you wanted to block a top-level domain, that you would just simply block it. Mm-hmm. And what you're describing is significantly more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I can add something.
That would be a very good short summary of the 5 minutes I just talked.
Suzanne.
Yeah, just to sort of pick up on that a little bit, I think the main point from the policy perspective is going to turn out to be that it's not simple, that you're talking about a fairly complicated thing where everything you do has effects and side effects. And the question to ask, one of the things that Matt pointed out, is that there are a large number of different control points within the network and within the operation of the network, depending on exactly what you're trying to accomplish and what your scope, what your own scope of control actually is. And the thing to look at turns out to be, given whatever effect you're actually striving for, and again, you have to define the effect with a scalpel so you're not cutting with a meat cleaver, but given that there is this large variety of control points with different characteristics, what you end up having to ask is, what exactly are you trying to accomplish, and what access do you have? Because people block all kinds of things for all kinds of reasons. ISPs block what they consider malicious traffic. The virus and spam software on your PC blocks a lot of things that you don't want anyway. So there's a lot of different places to do a lot of different things, and you really have to think in terms of both effects and side effects and a variety of control points.
United States.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate, first let me thank all of you for taking time to meet with us today. We realized, I think, in writing that letter that we ourselves wanted to be better prepared to understand just what is going on today. Can it be measured? Can we have a better understanding from a policy perspective of the impact? But I have to tell you, just to share with you, because I'm not sure if you know this, from time to time in different exchanges with different board members, particularly the chairman, and I guess more recently with the CEO, this was a bilateral exchange that I'm happy to share with people. I know there was a discussion about a particular controversial name that we know several countries would simply not at all find acceptable. And the chairman said, well, you know, the option is just block it. Giant shrug, just block it. Okay, this is something that has been said to us. During a recent discussion about concerns from the banking industry about dot bank, got the same reaction. Well, if your Treasury Department doesn't like it, or if the U.S. regulator of the banking industry doesn't like it, because they may not like the operator, it may not be a legitimate, they may have no legitimate connection to what is, in almost all of our countries, if not all, a highly regulated industry. Well, you know, you can just block it. So we have actually been told this by two members of the ICANN board. So I just wanted to share that with you to hopefully help give you some context as to why we are now coming back and realizing it would be very helpful for us to be better informed and better educated as to why that is probably not a good solution. Thank you.
Ram?
Thank you. One other thing for you to consider when you're thinking about the word blocking is that often you could think of it as blocking, but often it ends up converting into redirection or synthesizing an artificial record in the DNS and saying, providing what appears to be helpful information. You know, you're trying to go to this invalid or this place. We don't like for you to go there. Therefore, we would like for you to go another place. And I would suggest, if you haven't already done so, to take a quick look at the ESSAC, which has written about the synthesis and redirection of top-level domains, and has called it basically evil. So redirection is just a short hop, skip, and a jump away from blocking, even if such a thing as blocking is technically feasible in a way that is the scalpel, as Matt was saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Ram. I have Lyman and then Italy.
I think it's important to recognize that, picking up on what Matt just described as a combination of the technical difficulty of being very precise and limited in the kinds of techniques that you deploy to block particular TLDs, the collateral damage that can be caused by that operates in two dimensions. There's the dimension that Matt described, which is the potential to inadvertently block access to desirable TLDs in the course of blocking access to the name servers for a TLD that is objectionable. On the other side of that, there's also the unintended and perhaps unforeseeable consequences of the changes in user behavior that can be provoked by efforts to block access to, in this case, TLDs, but many efforts to block access to content. And as you consider the possibility of a blocking regime having effects that were not intended or that go beyond what was intended, should also consider the impact on user behavior. For example, a user or user community confronted with blocked access to a particular site or a particular range of sites represented by a TLD, might, for instance, in large numbers resort to using alternative DNS services rather than the DNS service provided by their ISP. In some cases, this might or might not be possible. It might be difficult. So, the extent of the problem as a practical matter might be large or small. But it's an example of the kind of effect that might be observed in that second dimension, which is the way in which user behavior might change in response to efforts to implement policy through blocking mechanisms.
Thank you, Lyman. I have Italy, then Harold.
We have in front of this, the title of our presentation was Universal Resolvability. But here we are talking practically of content control. And we have verified that, especially if we take the example of spam, anti-spam is also kind of content control. But many countries, they are experiencing content control for other reasons, for political reasons, and this is quite general. Look at the case of China, just to mention one. The point of making this content control through domain names is something that should not scare so much, in my opinion, because there are ways if there is a blocking in a country of a domain name that there are arguments and means in order to avoid this through secondary servers or through other technical means. So in the end, from the policy side, someone could fear is what we can call a fragmentation of the network. But I don't think that in this way, just if some country wants to block a domain names because it is not accepted, that there will be a real fragmentation of the network. On the opposite, there will be ways to overcome this. Of course, with new GTLDs, we should, in any case, try to avoid as possible to have governments so emphatically opposed such to block a domain name. But in the end, this will not function with they will not realize the intention unless the population is so in agreement with the government that all wants to make this blocking effective. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Harold.
I'm Harald Lallestrøm, member of the board, expert is maybe too strong, but I've been around there for a while. I wasn't sure whether I would say anything at all, so I didn't introduce myself at first. But one point to realize when talking about blocking is that, unfortunately, or from my political standpoint, unfortunately, we have long, long experience by now of how to block things on the internet. And the thing is that it's not black or white. It's not like you go from everyone can access to nobody can access in overnight. The usual thing is if you want something blocked, you issue an executive order of some kind, and you get 90% of the population covered by modifications at the three biggest ISPs. You get 10% of the population finding ways around the blocks, and you then engage in this little back and forth. So blocking is not should not be thought of as preventing access, it should be thought of as making access more difficult. What I don't like about blocking most is that it causes people to build machinery that can be used for other kinds of blocking, censorship, tracing down who is accessing what, surveillance, and it makes also the internet significantly more expensive, so that by forcing blocking mechanisms into the network, we are causing harm in multiple economic and political dimensions. So the points I'm making, I don't like blocking mechanisms. We have long experience with them. They're not black and white. They're attempts to block. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Harold. Okay, I have Danny and then Sweden.
So the comment I was going to make is that, you know, I heard in your opening remarks that, you know, universal resolvability is at least in spirit a principle of the GAC. I think, and I'm not as well read on ICANN policies, I think the closest in policy you get to that is ICP3 and a global unique namespace and a single root. My expectation sort of as a technologist about universal resolvability is that irrespective of where I connect to the internet or to that network, I'm going to get the same deterministic results. And, I understand lots of reasons why, an organization or a nation or a hotel Wi-Fi access point may want to synthesize or modify a response or block something. But if that universal resolvability at the top in the sort of inherently hierarchical pieces of the namespace at the root and the TLD level isn't unique and isn't globally unique and resolvable, then that could certainly be problematic. One other point that I wanted to highlight, which I think is important, is that the security framework that's been developed by the community with DNSSEC in particular makes assumptions about the existence and the non-existence and allows people to attest to that at an object level in that namespace. And if you make changes to that or you block that and users are captive to that policy, it can certainly perturb other pieces of the system and result in further collateral damage potentially. And so it's something else to keep in mind, is that the security framework that we've architected isn't compatible with blocking from that perspective, or isn't compatible with a fragmented global namespace or an expectation that that organizations may block or modify that global namespace in some manner.
Thank you. Next, I have Sweden, then the Netherlands, and then John Curran. Okay.
Thank you very much, Heather. I just want to thank Harold very much for your very wise contribution, because sometimes we focus very much on blocking TLDs and whether it's good or not, a fragmentation of the internet, and I'm really against that and for many, many reasons, censorship and many other technical and other reasons. But sometimes we focus on that too much, and maybe we forget that blocking is already taking place for various reasons. And so I just want to say thank you very much, Harold, for giving a little bit wider perspective, because we need that when we're having these kind of discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sweden. Before I move to the next speaker, I was interested in something Danny had said about the security framework not being architected to deal with blocking. And I think we might want to explore that a little bit more. I'm just trying to, but we can come back to you. I mean, if you wanted to,
I can make a
sure. Okay, go ahead. Yeah,
I won't get too detailed. I'll make a very short comment with that. With DNSSEC and the security framework we put in place to preserve integrity and authentication in the namespace, we've developed a way to attest to existence or non-existence and the integrity of any object in the DNS in the global namespace. And if you modify those objects, then you're diverging from that global uniqueness and the integrity of that system altogether. And so you would have in DNSSEC validation failures that may perturb other aspects of the system.
Thank you. Suzanne, you wanted to add on that particular point?
Sure, just sort of more to the point of large numbers of ways and means of blocking things for large numbers of reasons is sort of what Danny was basically saying, is that we've created technologies around a certain set of expectations that if names exist, you want to be able to prove that. You want to be sure of that, because having a name that exists not validate, not be provable, is considered a failure, is considered a broken thing. And if we're talking about a situation where we're also encouraging or even just agreeing to live with the undermining that assumption, we have changed both the behavior of the network and the expectations we want people to put on it in a way that is kind of unpredictable. It ends up being harder to maintain networks where you don't know what to expect. So that's a cost on the ability to provide internet service. And there's this higher level set of policy questions that comes out of what are the implications of having people not really know what they're going to get.
Thank you for that elaboration. Netherlands.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And thanks for the good insight about the pros and cons of blocking. What I'm wondering, we very much focus now on the unintended effects, side effects, collateral damage of blocking. What I wonder is, could you say something more about the intended effects? Is it effective? I mean, people, all your knowledge is of course also on the other side of the people who don't want to be blocked with their TLD or with their site. So I wonder how effective is blocking at all? Other ways to bypass it, other ways to... Thanks.
Thank you, Netherlands. I have John Curran next.
I guess I will attempt to answer the open question, and then I'd like to talk about the phrase universal resolvability. With respect to how effective blocking is, there are today many organizations, companies, that block domains on the exit to their corporate network. And there are actually ISPs that do it as well, either blocking or redirecting domains. And these practices exist. It's interesting because a decade ago, and these practices, they do work. You need to keep them updated. It is a little bit of chasing a moving target because the organizations change domains very rapidly to avoid this. But you can maintain blocks, and there are organizations that download services that keep track of the list of domains that the undesirable content per that policy is on. So it does function, not perfectly, but as a reasonable effort that some organizations use to prevent content. You could see it functioning as well to the extent that GTLD level, to the extent that those websites remain in the GTLD, it would probably suffice. The question that comes up, so I guess the summary is, it does work if imperfectly, as Harold says. It raises the cost. It is not a perfect filter. There is a question that the GAC's use of the term universal resolvability has sort of called. The GAC has sort of is a little bit in front of the ICANN as a whole, because you've introduced a term which many of us take for granted. Universal resolvability seems like something that we all should believe in. In fact, Danny said it earlier, there was some discussion around a uniform namespace that resulted in a Internet Consensus Policy, ICP3, for ICANN, which says we shall have one unique global root for the namespace. But it talks about the serving of names being one unique namespace. It doesn't talk about resolvability. It's also true that with the rollout of DNSSEC, there's an implication that there is one uniform set of answers to the question of how you resolve a name. So it's almost implied in the statement that we're rolling out DNSSEC to the community. So the fact is we've agreed on a single route. We've said we're going to deploy DNSSEC. This should be enough to say that blocking of resolutions at the DNS level isn't something that the community believes is a good mechanism. But I would like to point out today, we don't currently have a community consensus policy that actually says that. We have one that says we have one route. We've never said resolver answers should not be blocked and that we should have universal resolvability. It's implied in DNSSEC. It's implied in some of the GAC's use of the term. But it might be a larger conversation, and it would need to resolve against the practices that some ISPs and some companies are doing today within their own networks.
Thank you very much, John. I have New Zealand, and then Matt and Danny.
thank you. I guess I'm having a simple mind, trying to keep things simple in my mind. It seems to be the consensus view from our expert advisors that the answer to a controversial top-level domain that has been given by the chair and the president of ICANN, that simply block is not a good answer. Is that what I'm hearing? Thank you.
I would say that at best it's incomplete.
Matt, please.
Yeah, I'd just like to follow up on John's good comments, and I guess reiterate, I think what John said, part of it can largely be summarized as DNSSEC is fundamentally incompatible with blocking, so that trying to change content, how things resolve at the DNS level, is 180 degrees in opposition to the DNSSEC deployment that so many people are working so hard on to add security to the DNS after all these years. They really, it's an oil and water thing. They don't go together.
Danny.
So I was going to both expand upon what Matt and John said in the resolution layer. From a DNS architecture perspective, it's both centralized and inherently hierarchical, but it's also distributed, particularly distributed at the resolution or the recursive layer, which is what John was talking about. The resolution layer is commonly where people apply various policies, for example, security policies to stop a malicious system from connecting to a phishing site or something like that. So, you know, there are many examples. I think that the DNS has become a hammer for some of those policy functions when, as Harold points out, there are many ways to get around those, and it's just that, you know, the DNS was a sufficiently effective place to do that traditionally, but DNSSEC certainly compromised that capability. One other observation I wanted to share is that if you make changes at the root or the TLD level where the inherent hierarchy in the DNS is assumed, then it's certainly more problematic than at the resolution layers. However, even at the resolution layers, if you decide to institute policy for whatever reason, as John points out, one of the trends we're seeing is what I refer to as the democratization of resolution, in particular in systems. So traditionally, an in system would use its ISP's resolver or its local hotel's DNS resolver or maybe its corporate resolver. And one of the things we're seeing today is because of policies on those systems, on those resolution systems, in systems now are selecting their own resolvers. And this makes the network much more complex, and it makes any policy that's applied based on resolution namespace ineffective or at least ill-advised if you're looking for complete security. And so I just wanted to share that observation as well.
Thank you, Danny. Harold.
Just a brief making more precise, DNSSEC is incompatible with lying about what information should be there. So it's incompatible with resolution. But it's not incompatible with making things stop working. So if you want to block, you can make it impossible to get somewhere by when the NSA gets applied, but you cannot impose your own idea of what should have been there instead of what's actually there. Might be important in some contexts.
Thank you, Harold. I have European Commission, UK, and New Zealand, and Netherlands.
Thank you, Heather. I'm trying to collect my thoughts. DNSSEC incompatibility with blocking, then Harold's comments, then using blocking to reestablish security. But then Suzanne said talking about the side effects of blocking. So using blocking for security at the same time, is there any point where one would say blocking or the use of blocking or a quantity of blocking would be a danger for the stability of the system? Is there a tipping point?
UK.
Thanks. Actually, that was one of the questions I had. The quantification of this, has there been any study of the extent to which a risk of instability becomes more severe if there is a coincidence of blocking for whatever reasons? That was one question I had as well. Secondly, this is interesting about DNSSEC. I wasn't aware of this issue of incompatibility with blocking, and of course, with the prospect of a very large expansion of the GTRD space, and quite possibly, for whatever reasons, political or whatever other sensitivities, might trigger quite widespread blocking of individual new GTLDs. Is that going to create a point of contention, DNSSEC rolling out at the same time as the prospect of blocking at the top level increasing through the sheer number of opportunities provided by a larger, much larger GTLD space? So that was my second question. I've got a third one. Forgive me for piling all these in at one go. But what about the history of country code top-level domains? Is there some collation of data about incidents of a whole national CCTLD being blocked, which I believe has happened, or does happen? I'm not knowledgeable in detail about this, but is that I'd be interested to hear if there is a perspective on the history of country code domains being blocked for whatever reason, or being continued to be blocked, I guess in some cases primarily political reasons. I won't name individual ones. Thanks.
Would anyone like to respond to that from the technical community, or shall I continue through the list and let you reflect a little bit on those questions? Okay, reflect. All right, Netherlands, you're next.
My question was more like a case study which I would like to give to you very shortly, because let's assume that we have a GTL string which is offensive, or let's say offensive for a certain part in the world, certain countries. When you say, okay, blocking is not the answer and has unintended side effects, you would assume that you would then need to block the whole GTD for the whole world. I mean, this is very exaggerated what I'm saying, but I'm wondering if there are still mechanisms in which you could have still this GTLD for the rest of the world who does want it and does not think it's offensive or against cultural, religion, ethnic, whatever reasons. And Is there still a method in which you don't block, you don't have unintended side effects, you don't jeopardize the resolvability, in that you have still a kind of separation in which you can use in certain world password, you can use a string in the other not? It's hypothetical, but I would like to know what your reactions would be as a solution for this. Thank you.
Ramses, you were able to respond on that.
So if you're trying to minimize the amount of collateral damage outside of that entity, making the blocking, probably looking at the content itself would be the most effective, meaning either deep packet inspection or some form of end-user type blocking. But any of the other methods, the further you get away from the user or the application layer, you start running the risk now of having collateral damage that is very difficult to control. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. That's excellent. Okay. I have Thomas, then Suzanne, and possibly others to respond on that point.
Yeah, let me just respond to sort of the question of, is there a tipping point? I think the answer is we don't necessarily know, and I would be hesitant to say yes, there is, or no, there is not, because I think there's lots of shades of gray here. But let me give you an example of how stability could be impacted. And this falls back on one of the original examples that was given, where you have one server that is actually serving many TLDs. And this is happening in a way that other people don't know this is going on. So if you block access to that one server because it has one objectionable TLD on it, you're now making perhaps the backup abilities of that server for the other domains, you're taking them off as well. So now, in a normal setting, for example, there might be, say, three servers available to serve content. You've shut one of them down, and now there's only two. And then somewhere else, another TLD server is also blocked for a completely different reason, and now all of a sudden you only have one server that's effectively serving the content. And now you've got a system that is less resilient and more at risk due to, a link going down, a denial of service attack going on, and so forth. So, yes, there are risks, but I think it's going to be very difficult to say there is a clear tipping point and that it's black and white.
Suzanne.
Thank you, Heather. I'm listening to all of this, and I'm completely delighted that there seems to be a larger conversation starting than, this is not going to be something we finish here, because particularly the last couple of questions, I hear those as a technologist and an operator, and I say, those are almost research questions. There's clearly a much larger conversation here, and I'm curious if there's a way to continue it, and I'm particularly concerned with arriving at a common terminology now that, for instance, it sounds like we've established that saying block a TLD in your country is actually a very complicated and is an incomplete assertion with many complicated nuances to working out what it actually means. If there's some way forward as far as common terminology and being able to figure out how to talk further about these things.
Thank you, Suzanne. I have Matt and then Danny. And Ram, yes, I think Ram, you're after Danny. Okay.
Yeah, several of the recent comments have gone toward a point that I wanted to make, and they all lead into it, which is, I guess, just to go back to my earlier statement, that there are so many ways to do blocking. I listed four initially, some with subcategories, and so we've still been using blocking in a very general way, but all of those techniques have their own sets of challenges, and I think that's important to keep in mind. And in many cases, for example, as I said earlier, networks don't follow political boundaries. Doing blocking via way of client software and end systems, there's a huge number of end systems. It's very difficult to get a piece of software on everyone's computer if that's the way you want to do it. In any given region where you might want to block, there are many recursive name servers. At the .com infrastructure, we see 5 million unique IP addresses contact us in a given 24-hour period. So there's just a huge number of recursive name servers out there. So I guess my overarching point is that each of these solutions have their own challenges, and they're all particularly difficult.
Thank you. Danny, then Ram, and then Lyman.
I was going to respond to Suzanne's comment, something Thomas touched on, and actually even Matt in his opening remarks, which are, you know, if you look at the landscape today for TLDs, you know, there are about 300 TLDs in the root zone, and, you know, we see some name servers, some, you know, common pieces of IP address space or number space on the Internet that serve as much as 10% of that or nearly 10% of that. And so again, the collateral damage function. Additionally, if you're going to institute policy at, for example, a nation state border, if you have the capability to do that, something else worth observing is that 30% of the ccTLDs today do not have a single authority server that actually resides inside of their own infrastructure. So the global nature of the Internet and sort of the multi-network shared dependencies that exist may significantly compromise the internal infrastructure availability or capability when you institute policies like this. One other observation that I wanted to have to share was that when you institute policy in the namespace from a computer science perspective, what happens is that the DNS simply enables most transactions today. Most users on the Internet don't even know what the DNS is, right? They know that they desire to go to a web page, and they type it into a browser, and they arrive at the web page. When you institute policy in the DNS and the globally unique DNS, what happens is that people that want to do, for example, malicious activity or distribute some kind of content that may be questionable in some region, you simply add a layer of indirection, and they find another place to do that. And so now you don't have the community oversight or the capability to at least observe and maybe be more aware of that capability. And I think that applies in general to any policy or legal or other frameworks in the namespace. And so it's something worth considering when you say block here or provide this capability there in name resolution. I think that it becomes very problematic and pushes name resolution towards fragmentation that I don't think anybody in the ICANN or the larger Internet community would see as desirable.
Thank you very much for that. Ram.
Thank you. I wanted to respond specifically to the question from the UK about ccTLDs and whether there is data out there. There is fragmented data about ccTLDs or attempts to have them be blocked. But the real question is blocked from where? Often the point of view, the perspective of who is trying to get to that TLD from where makes a pretty significant difference. Something to keep in mind is that when attempting to block, it may work for some sets of users for a certain amount of time, but with the distributed nature of the DNS, and as some of my colleagues have mentioned, there are very simple ways to actually overcome it, including techniques like cloaking and anonymizing and using piggybacking onto other valid TLDs, for example, and forcing you to make a judgment about if you take one down, you're going to take a whole bunch of others down, and those are the kinds of techniques you could certainly imagine the affected parties to adopt. So the soundbite is careful what you wish for, because you might set off a little bit of an arms race in terms of folks saying, I will route around this. Blocking is merely an attempt, and I will simply route around it. There are plenty of technical ways to do it, and some of them might actually make the identification and traceability far more difficult than exists today.
Thank you. Lyman.
Thank you, Heather. I think that as we talk about the technical means that might be used to achieve what we're calling, using a very general term, blocking, and I'd like to second Suzanne's comment a moment ago. I find this kind of exchange extremely valuable and hope that we can find a way to continue to have a dialogue between those of you in the GAC who are concerned with how to implement policies and those of us from the technical community who have access to the mechanisms that could be used, the levers and the tools that might be used to implement that policy. So I hope that we can continue to have this kind of conversation. But one of the important aspects when you're looking at the range of technical approaches that might be used to implement blocking at different layers, thinking about what Matt has been describing, it's important to distinguish between blocking the content that might be hosted at a particular site named by a domain and blocking the validity of a string itself. So if the nature of the sensitivity is such that the string itself is offensive, not the content at the site, but the string itself, the technical means that are available to prevent that string from being recognized within a certain region as a valid string. In other words, if your goal is to not allow that string to be recognized by user software and user systems as a valid string, the technical means that are available to you to prevent that from happening are very different and occur at different layers than the technical means that you might be able to use to block access to the content that that string leads you to. So if you are happy to have the string resolve, but what you want to do is to prevent access to any content that might be hosted at a site that that string leads you to, that's a very different question from a sensitivity to the existence and validity of the string itself.
Thank you, Lyman. European Commission, and then John.
Well, actually, I just wanted to echo exactly the point there that we need to continue this conversation. I think that this session has been excellent, actually. I mean, it's worth the entrance fee itself, actually, coming here. And I'd like to thank, I'm not trying to wrap up on the chairman's behalf, but I see there are people coming in. I didn't want the opportunity to pass. So thank you very much for the clarity of the communication, the information you provided today. But this is an important subject. For many of us, the stability and security of the Internet is our overarching public policy priority. So this format today has worked extremely well, I think. And I really hope we can repeat it. Even perhaps in the next meeting, I think it seems there's plenty of potential for us to explore this and unrelated stability of issues, if I can call them that, in the future. So I really would like to respond positively to the suggestion that we continue this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I think that is certainly the sense of the room, and we look forward to continuing this. Discussion. I have a few people left in the speaking order, so perhaps we can go through those, recognizing we're going over time and some people really do need to leave. Thank you very much. Okay, so I have next John, then, oh no, okay, thank you, John. All right, then I have New Zealand and United States, and then I think that is it. All right.
Thank you. I'd very much like to echo what Bill D said. Very, very interesting session and well worth continuing. But I'd just like to return to something which I think Harold mentioned about using a means of telling lies within the domain name system, to use a non-technical construct, in that the DNSSEC is aimed at preventing lies from being told. And I guess it's a less global sort of question than some of the ones we've had, but many filtering systems used for things like protection of children and so on use misdirection of the domain names. And am I to take it from that statement from Harold about preventing of telling lies that those filtering systems, in fact, will become redundant and obsolete when a fully deployed DNSSEC system? I think that's
probably a matter of considerable public interest. Thank you.
An excellent question. Are there any quick answers from the technical side? Okay, Ramses and Suzanne.
I wish I could give you a very specific answer. Unfortunately, I can't, and really the answer is it depends, because it depends how the systems are filtering. If they're looking at specific sites, they may. But if you're looking at the content, then it's very likely that they'll continue to operate, because at that point you're looking at what is on that site rather than where it is, what the domain name is. And so it really depends on how that filtering is being implemented.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Sure. I think Matt said it very well, which was that certain blocking mechanisms, and we are down to mechanisms, not policies, but certain mechanisms are incompatible with DNSSEC, because the underlying assumption with DNSSEC is policy neutral about whether what the domain holder or owner or controller put into the system and what you get out. All it tells you, it is completely policy neutral as to whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that the name does exist and you can get to it. All it does is tell you yes or no, that that's really what was put there. So the short answer is that some mechanisms are not compatible with DNSSEC, but that's completely policy neutral.
United States?
Thank you, Heather, and apologies for keeping you all a little longer than you expected, but it might be helpful to all the other parties who have come in, because the next item on our agenda is new GTLDs, but just to kind of reinforce it, that is the context that for our outreach to you all to help us better understand, because we have concerns with the current applicant guidebook and the objection procedures available to governments. So we are trying to explore if a government feels that that does not work for them and their only option is to block, we're trying to understand the negative impact. The GEC is not seeking. I don't think there is a GEC member that affirmatively wants to embrace that as a policy decision in response to controversial new top-level domains. Our concern is that some governments may simply feel compelled, and so we'd like to better understand the impact. It sounds to us that we need to continue to have this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. And with that final word, let me thank again the technical community for joining us this morning. It was very useful. And we will find a way to continue this discussion. So thank you. For the GAC, we'll have a 10-minute break, and then we'll continue with new GTLDs. Okay.